Hello and welcome to this latest episode of Safeguarding Voice. This podcast is produced by Education Child Protection, and on each episode we explore a different area of safeguarding. Our aim is to empower professionals who work with children and vulnerable adults with information and guidance. This episode we are joined by Brenda Evans, the For Baby's Sake Therapeutic Lead and East of England Team Manager, and Judith Rees, the Director of Operations. Okay, welcome back, listeners. And on today's episode, I'm super excited to be joined by two colleagues from the For Baby's Sake Trust. But before we have a quick discussion exploring the wonderful work you do for your service users, let's perhaps start with a bit of an intro, shall we? So, Brenda, if you want to give an introduction.
Yeah, thank you for having us today. I'm Brenda Evans, and I'm the Therapeutic Lead and East of England Team Manager.
Fabulous. Thank you, Brenda. And Judith, we're joined with as well.
Thank you. I'm really pleased to be here. I'm Judith Rees, Director of Operations, and have a background in 33 years in the NHS before joining the Trust 9 years ago.
Fabulous. Wonderful. Thank you very much. So I'm sure our listeners are really eager to hear a bit more about the For Baby's Sake Trust, what you are, what services you offer. So Brenda, I wonder if you could start perhaps with a bit of an overview for us.
Yeah, sure. The For Baby's Sake Trust is the charity actually that's responsible for creating and delivering For Baby's Sake. And that's an evidence-based programme that addresses previous barriers to achieving successful outcomes by failing to provide whole family responses to domestic abuse. Okay. We work with everyone in the family, mm-hmm. including those using harmful behaviours,
yeah.
and to support them both through a process of change. It's a therapeutic trauma-informed programme working with expectant parents individually. So they each have their own therapeutic mm-hmm. practitioner.
Yeah.
But they must have a genuine desire to co-parent their unborn baby, whether they're a couple or not.
Mm-hmm.
It operates within a framework, a recovery framework, to overcome the devastating effects of domestic abuse. Mm. Acknowledge and explore unresolved and often complex childhood trauma.
Yeah.
And change harmful patterns of behaviour to develop a home environment where children can flourish.
Yeah.
As we know, you know, domestic abuse has a huge impact on families generally, but more importantly on children.
And I really love that bit about the organisation is very much a holistic package of support,
yeah,
looking
absolutely.
At, you know, support around the whole family, which is so important when we think about domestic abuse.
I mean, I think traditionally services did a bit of a mop up when there was an incident and children would be removed.
Reactive to...
Yeah, quite rightly, to keep them safe. But unless we work with whoever's using abusive behaviours, nothing's going to change because they'll go from one relationship to another.
Yeah, yeah.
And I do believe that people can change given the right set of circumstances, and they are worthy of support.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I mean, men have been marginalised in this space for many, many years, but I think it's important to recognise that these people are in a relationship and therefore there's two people in the relationship.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
both need support to change what's going on.
Yeah, 100%. You know, we hear a lot from work being done in local safeguarding children's partnerships about the role of men and dads and carers, how we equally need to include them in that holistic package of support. So it's really wonderful to hear on such a high risk, high need area, such as domestic abuse, that whole family approach is really taken. And that kind of leads, I suppose, into thinking about the wider topic of risk and harm. You know, domestic abuse, we know how impactful that could be. So it's around how do we support that in the context of that whole family work. I don't know if there's more within the framework there of what you do with families to kind of...
Yeah, sure. We adopt an attachment-focused parenting approach.
Yeah.
And we find that this really does enhance the opportunity for the children to feel safe and secure with parents who are more emotionally available and attuned to their children's needs. Families are supported until the baby reaches the age of two, and the significance of this two-year timescale is evidenced in all recent child development research. So those crucial 1,001 days when the baby's brain is developing.
Yeah,
And For Baby's Sake offers an unrivaled package of tailored support that really does create a real opportunity for lasting and sustainable change. And we have multidisciplinary teams that consist of highly trained therapeutic practitioners who can establish and maintain meaningful relationships that consistently guarantee engagement, which is really important.
So important.
And crucially, provides the framework for the deeper therapeutic exploration that allows parents to understand the impact of their own parenting experiences.
Yeah, and I suppose that kind of really looks at not just the what is happening, but the why is happening as well. And how to create that real internal change by providing that full supportive package of
Very often people don't understand why they're behaving the way they do and the impact of their own experiences as children. So it's crucial that they understand what happened to them, so they don't feel they have to be defined by, you know, their past. There is a way forward.
And I really like what you said there in the opening bit, Brenda, about everyone's deserving of support and everyone's capable of change. So it's important that we don't marginalise members of the family and don't include them in that support moving forward. And, you know, a lot of the work that you do, I've been fortunate myself as a practitioner in social care to have, you know, exposure to the wonderful services you offer. But I suppose for our listeners, when they think about the formulation of your approaches and the kind of legislation that your services operate under, what that kind of looks like, what informs your practice?
Yeah, so obviously we're working across Safeguarding Children, so the Children's Act, but also across adult services, because we're working also with vulnerable adults, and of course the Domestic Abuse Act, which, you know, is fantastic that now includes babies and children as victims in their own right. So that's really what underpins the work that we're doing. It is key to safeguarding and managing risks when we're working with domestic abuse, and also when working with a pregnancy.
Yes.
As well. So really important.
Yeah, wonderful. And I suppose, you know, linking back to that kind of impact element, particularly around families during the point where they're expecting a new child, you know, that can understandably be quite a high pressured, high stressful time for those expectant parents. What was kind of known about data around trends, risks around domestic abuse, particularly at this time?
So we know all the stats tell us that one in four women in the UK will experience domestic abuse or violence in their lifetime, which carries domestic abuse, you know, it carries a financial cost to society as well. And the Home Office estimates that domestic abuse costs £66 billion per year in England and Wales alone. And we know the impact of domestic abuse on maternal, but also paternal mental health, and the impact that has on parenting, you know, babies and children. And we also know that domestic abuse is more likely to begin or escalate during pregnancy, and it has a significant negative effect, implications for pregnant women and their babies. In fact, it doubles the risk of preterm birth and low birth weight babies. And three and more than 40% of survivors experience mental health issues, and these include anxiety, depression, and emotional dysregulation, or poor bonding with their babies and children.
And I suppose that kind of looking at the real long-term impact there, it's about recognising it isn't just the impact to the children, the unborn baby, but also, of course, the parents and carers at the heart of it. And I suppose, you know, knowing about the data, the risks, the trends, particularly at that really high pressured, high stressful moment in time, kind of linking back there to what Brenda was talking around, how important the relationship is to develop with those families and the types of ways and means that you do that. You know, how do you build trust and rapport with families during this really kind of high pressured time?
I mean, I think I would say the quality of the relationship is the single most important factor for achieving successful outcomes. It really is. A therapeutic relationship, which is what we provide, can be defined as interactive, consistent, collaborative, with very defined goals that are transparent. You have to have boundaries in place, but people need to be shown a non-judgmental attitude by by someone who's caring, positive, but still professional.
Yeah.
There are three core conditions for a therapeutic relationship. The first is empathy. And the very best definition of that I think I've ever heard was by Carl Rogers,
yep.
who some of you may be well aware of. And he says that empathy is the ability to enter into someone else's world as if it were your own, but never forget the as-if quality.
Mm-hmm.
That's really key to developing this sort of relationship. So empathy, congruence, and unconditional positive regard. So we don't come with judgments, we're not there to do that. We're there to support them. To work therapeutically, you need to have a range of skills and personal qualities. And these would include an understanding of the human psyche and a keen awareness of what drives behaviours.
Yeah.
Obviously, the ability to empathise with others and establish positive relationships.
Mm.
Excellent communication skills. A responsible professional approach that's respectful and trusting. The ability to relate to a wide range of people, because domestic abuse is not selective. It happens to everybody.
Yeah, anyone and everyone could be a victim survivor.
They need to have emotional resilience and maturity. A degree of emotional intelligence is necessary. Self-awareness and a capacity for self-reflection.
Mm.
Commitment to continued personal development and a commitment to quality, diversity and inclusion. So all of these things are requirements for somebody to work in this way.
Yeah.
And this list probably isn't exhaustive.
Mm.
We do look for additional things, but we have a very robust recruitment policy when we have positions, and it's much more about the person rather than someone coming along with, you know, a lot of qualifications or even being qualified in therapy.
Mm.
We do have some qualified people, but that isn't essential. It's about the person.
Yeah, and actually that creates a really positive culture, you know, for the organisation as much as it does for your service users.
Absolutely. Mm. But it is, the relationship is key, because relationships heal relationships.
Yeah, definitely. And I know that's something really reflected across wider guidance, working together to safeguard children of 23, heavy focus on building, cultivating that relationship by those qualities, you know, being empathic.
Yeah, and I think that also goes for the work that we do with the other professionals, because as the practitioners don't work in isolation with our parents, you know, they work with the other multidisciplinary team that may be supporting the families, including social workers, teachers with older children, health visitors, midwifery. So it's really important, you know, that those relationships are built with the professionals, and then to support our parents to be able to have a better relationship with those professionals and their relationship to seeking support and acceptance of accepting that support and not seeing it as
invasion of privacy
but to see it's there for them, which I think is one of the hooks that supports the engagement of parents within the program, because they're able to see the non-judgmental approach. But also the motivation to want to write a different script for their unborn baby, which is why it's so important, you know, of starting in pregnancy. This is why our program evolved, that gap in provision around, we know domestic abuse starts in the womb. And so preparing parents to understand their unborn baby, to begin the bonding process before the baby's born, is so important. And especially, yes, for the mum, but also for the dad to begin that journey. So very often you talked about before, fathers can be marginalised and not included in this process, and especially when it's domestic abuse.
Yeah. And I suppose, you know, thinking about that kind of provision around supporting expectant parents generally, you know, there's almost that, I suppose, physical detachment, particularly for men, for fathers, expectant fathers. So to have such an inclusive programme of support that very much brings them on board is so important for the whole relational dynamic for everybody, particularly, you know, for the family entering into this transition of change, you know, with the new baby on the way. And I really liked there, Judith, what you were saying about, you know, this isn't just relational working with the core, with families, parents and carers, but extending to our professional relationships. And again, working together, you know, talks about how we need to have a shared common goal, shared vision, effective information sharing, effective communication, because it just gets all muddled and confusing for the family if us as professionals can't align and communicate and share with each other in a purposeful and meaningful way as well. So that kind of really relates and tallies with, I'm sure, with our listeners in thinking about what we're talking wider guidance, particularly for professionals working in that either caring capacity or, you know, potentially our educational colleagues as well.
And I think that also includes the use of language. You'll hear how we speak about the language when we're talking about domestic abuse as well. And so I think that's so important to use trauma-informed language and to support other professionals to think who's behind and not to label.
Yeah, parents. And not to inadvertently shame or blame somebody because of their lived experience, because of behaviours maybe that have adapted as part of a course of what they've lived or gone through.
Yeah, I mean, they come with enough guilt and shame that we discover fairly early on. And just to reinforce that would mean they wouldn't want to engage with us.
And not be helpful and have successful outcomes, full stop.
Yeah, for everybody.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you. And I suppose wrapped up all of that kind of relational working and kind of there's been references throughout already about the importance of being preventative, you know, early intervention, early engagement. And I suppose kind of knowing the work you've done supporting families and parents, what's really come through in terms of the why of seeking support and early intervention is so, so important.
Yeah, so like we've picked up before, it's seeking support in pregnancy. We're obviously, it's earlier intervention for that unborn baby before the baby's born, so it's not born into a home where there's domestic abuse. But for other family members, it can be later, but it could be earlier because, you know, the support is there for them. And we know from research that victims of domestic abuse or experiencing domestic abuse want support for their partner, and their partner's more likely to seek support if they know their partner's seeking support as well. That's why so even though it's early intervention that we say for the baby, it's not always early intervention for the parents in the family, because they could have done with the intervention when they were babies and children. But we work across the spectrum of risk. So for some of our families, they may be experiencing standard to high risk domestic abuse and may be in the social care of child protection plans or in public law outline. So it's not always early for them. So it's really helping our listeners understand that it's an early intervention for the baby, but it's not just early help.
Yeah. And it could be, you know, as you outlined there very clearly, that a family may have already had previous relational difficulties, maybe even previous instances of concerns that have been raised around domestic abuse. So it's kind of looking at through the lens of support of to enable them to welcome the child into the world safely and explore perhaps how previous strains in the dynamic may have caused instances or concerns, to kind of get them on the right path early, I think, with that support.
Yeah, because most of our families come with probably on average, I'd say, Judith, about 6 ACEs each. Yeah.
Adverse childhood experiences.
And, you know, they're very, very hard to overcome without support, which is why the inner child module, which is the therapeutic core of our programme, is so important. So they get that opportunity to really reflect on the way they were parented as children and understand that whatever happened to them, it wasn't their fault.
And that removal of blame.
And I think for, you know, many of the families across our teams that we work with have had previous children taken into care or, you know, not remained in their care. Whereas when they get, you know, the offer for Baby Sake, it gives them another chance to build those relationships with their practitioners alongside the other professional, the other system. So it is early intervention for that baby in the womb. and for them, and they, you know, are often really motivated knowing that they're going to get a different kind of support as well,
and the hope for different kind of experience of engagement. And that kind of links back to what you said earlier, Judith, about, you know, the value of helping those families to identify that the role of support is there to support. And actually, if you've had a previous past difficult relationship with professionals or in a professional context, sometimes those barriers of fear or resistance may naturally be there because they don't want to replicate or go through similar situations. But that's where the power of knowing about organisations such as yourself is really key. That actually, you know, it could be done, could be approached differently this time with the right support at the right time.
As our strapline says, there is another way.
And a powerful message that, you know, we want to convey that it isn't the blueprint defines where you go. Actually, it can be support if offered early.
And keeping the hope. You know, that's what underpins.
Yeah, really, really important. And, you know, I suppose on that note, you know, we spoke at length there about the wonderful services you have, how you interact, how you engage, not just with families, but the wider professional context. Where would be kind of the place to go in the first instance if anyone listening wants to find out more about the For Babies Sake Trust?
Yeah, absolutely. Go to our website. We've got a great website that tells you all about the programme, but it also tells you, the listener, about the wider work of the Trust. Lots of free resources that practitioners or listeners can go and download as well, including our emotional safety plans. That we, you know, really help support other professionals to embed and think about the emotional well-being of both parents in this period.
Yeah, fabulous. And I suppose for anyone who might be a parent or carer that's listening, that are thinking, actually, that sounds like some great support that I would like to explore, what would be the process of engaging with yourselves? Would it be a professional referral pathway? Can they self-refer? What's kind of the starting point?
Yeah, absolutely. A parent or carer is listening, you can reach out to the website and the details are on there, how to contact us, so you don't need to go through a professional. There's an email address at welcome@forbabysake.org. So yeah, please reach out and explore the website.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you so much for both your time talking through the wonderful work that you do today. And also just to kind of affirm to our listeners, everything referenced there, including the signposting to the website, we'll make sure that we pop there in the show notes for you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on this latest episode of Safeguarding Voice. For any documentation, guidance or resources referenced in this episode, please see the show notes. And a special thank you to Brenda and to Judith for joining us. This podcast is produced by Education Child Protection and was hosted by me, Carly Danes. Music production by Abby Dowsett. For more information about safeguarding, you can find us on all the social media platforms such as LinkedIn, X, Facebook and Instagram. And please do listen to more of our episodes that are available in the resources area of our website, Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you have time, please leave us a comment. We would love to hear from you.